This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by NatureBox. NatureBox ships tasty snacks right to your door with over 100 flavors to choose from, like Asiago and Cheddar Cheese Crisp. You'll never get bored of snacking again. Get your first NatureBox on them at NatureBox.com/twit. And by IT Pro TV. A good IT pro is always learning, and IT Pro TV is the resource to keep your IT skills up to date with engaging and informative video tutorials. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/NSS and use the code NSS30. And by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one easy integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay, period. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/NSS.
A new crop from Apple, feline facial recognition, and what is the dark web? Live from the Twit Brick House in beautiful downtown Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers!
Screensaver Sarah Lane, good
Hi.
To see you.
Good
we
got to
get you on the Segways one of these days so you can be part of the show open.
Okay. I've never actually ridden a Segway.
You
can
haven't?
You believe it? No.
That's
all
so
the
much
times
fun.
That we used to have Segways back in the old Tech TV studio,
yeah.
The boys never got off the Segways.
The girls never got a chance.
So we would call her and we'd just be like, no.
Can you stop riding that
Segway? Yeah, would you? You know.
We got two in the back, right, Lisa? Lisa rode them in today. So
really?
After the show, yeah, we'll get you on the green screen.
All the way from your house?
Yeah. Oh, it's great fun.
Okay.
You think we made that show open up? No, we did not.
No, I believe
hey,
you were
speaking
really
of
there.
Which, thanks to Mike from Phoenix, who did that great show open. Mike has a copy of Leo Laporte's 2002 computer almanac with him that was autographed. He also, there he is. And who's that behind him? That is my son, Henry. This was a Phoenix event we did in 2002. Henry was 8 years old.
And you guys look exactly the same.
And he acted out the whole time.
I remember when Henry used to do that.
Yeah.
He
the
was
whole
a, he
time.
Was a little, he liked being
there
in
you
car.
Go.
Hey,
thank you, Mike. Isn't that sweet? Nice to
nice
see you,
work.
Mike. Thanks for and good job opening. This is episode number 19, recorded Saturday, September 12th, 2015.
Happy September.
Happy September to you.
Thank
How's
you.
Things at TechCrunch?
Really good. Really good. We actually, I was just telling you before the show, we have been working on the studio where our offices are in San Francisco. And the studio already existed, but now we have a bunch of new kind of, I wouldn't call them fancy, but they're nice new shiny sets that just got completed.
Do you have
Thursday
a brick wall
night.
With a giant red X on it?
No.
Look at that.
We have, well, that's, yeah. So
that's the old studio.
Well, it's not the old studio. That's actually the newsroom where I do my
right.
show, Crunch
the
Report.
The Crunch Report, right.
But that's just one of the, you know, that's our newsroom look. But now we have a bunch of other sets as
oh,
well.
Oh, look at that. There
yeah,
it is. I see. They did a little
we'll
behind the scenes thing.
We put a little
thing.
Neon TC in the back.
Yeah.
So you can see that behind me.
Yeah.
It's just fun. It's a lot of work.
Do they have a giant gear and floating in the air?
It's not a replica of this studio, no.
Do they have giant
it's
arches? Nothing like that, huh?
TechCrunch is a, you know, we have a TechCrunch signature green, so you could say that we've taken a
the
page
green.
out of your book, and that there are green accents everywhere. However, it's fun. Building a studio is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Oh, my
oh, really?
Goodness.
I had no idea.
City permits.
oh, we didn't get permits.
And workers who don't show up
oh.
on time.
Yeah.
All sorts
are
of
you,
stuff.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't have to run that project. Are
no,
you running that project?
I'm running the video team, and that's
oh,
part of the
man.
Video team. But it's really fun, so thanks for asking.
It's a great show today. Threat analyst, hacker, old friend Adrian Lamo.
Yeah.
Will join us. Remember Adrian? He's going to
yeah.
talk about the dark web. He was a regular on the old
screensavers.
He and I are
Facebook friends.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also are going to talk about, well, you've heard about face recognition, feline recognition, Kitty cam.
Kitty dar.
Yeah, kitty kitty dar.
Yeah.
You look like a kitten.
You've heard of Radar.
It's a Raspberry Pi-based kitty cam. Father Robert Ballester is just back from Interdrone.
Interdrone?
Interdrone.
It's What's that?
The brand new drone conference in Vegas. We'll have a report.
What's the inter? Why not just call it DroneCon?
Between one drone and another, that's Interdrone.
Okay.
I don't know.
It just sounds so...
What?
Physical.
Yeah, I know. I hate, I hate that stuff. Don't touch me.
Are you joining me at Interdrone? Sir,
did you? You weren't at the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium.
I wasn't. I was holding out the fort. It's really funny to because all the tech blogs do the live blogs, right? It's obviously we know that because at Twit, when I would join you guys in our commentary, you know, everybody's got like five different live blogs open and see who's got the commentary first. And you know, at TechCrunch, it's like everyone's assigned certain things.
You got to do your your own live blog.
It's an exciting day in a different sort of way because you're the ones who are trying to get the information out as quickly as possible. And for the video team, there's a whole, there's lots of challenges associated with
that. As always, we covered it live. I was in New York. I couldn't because I was out of town.
You weren't even on the
first
panel?
Apple event. First Apple event I've missed since September. Let's see. When was it? When the iPod announcement was. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
So I like these Apple events. I feel like this is kind of a special day.
And it was such a big one.
It was. Fortunately, joining us right now via Skype, Dana Wolman and Andrew Cunningham, they were there. You are there. Hello, Dana. Hello, Andrew. And welcome to the new Screensavers. So let's start with you, Dana. Just your impressions of this event.
Definitely one of the bigger events we've had in a little while, which is just to say that this is the third Apple event actually in the year 2015. There was one in March and also one in June. And the Apple Watch one back in March was pretty momentous, but this one just had a lot of stuff. It wasn't just new iPhones, but pretty drastically different Apple TV, also the iPad Pro, which seems like a big deal if only because it's been had been rumored for so long. And it is a very interesting device for Apple, but just this is the first event in a while where I just came away thinking, wow, this is a lot of stuff. And I mean, from a journalistic perspective, a lot for people like me and Andrew.
2.5 hours worth of stuff.
Yeah, that was a lot of work.
I think really hard. 12.9 inches diagonally. That's huge.
We've been talking about that iPad Pro for years.
It was like the rumor that wouldn't die, maybe because I wouldn't let it die and then you wouldn't let it die.
And it was kind of weird because Apple... We know this is an iPhone event. The tagline is, "Hey Siri, give me a hint." So we know there'll be some Siri, probably Apple TV. Mm-hmm. But who would have thought they would have? They didn't lead with marketing. They didn't lead with how great the stores are doing, how well the iPhone's selling. They come right out of the box. They mention watchOS briefly, and then boom.
Right into the iPad Pro.
Let's talk iPad. How important is the iPad Pro, Andrew?
You know, it's for the last... How many quarters is it? It's been like a year, maybe a little bit more than that. The iPad has been on like this year over year sales decline. And I think that Tim Cook and everybody else at Apple has been trying to think of like ways to goose sales a little bit, to get more people buying iPads who aren't already buying them or who, you know, don't already have one. And this, the iPad Pro definitely appeals to an audience that I think the existing iPads just don't appeal to. It's got like the Apple Pencil. It's got the keyboard accessory, like the official one. It's coming with iOS 9, which has a whole bunch of different multitasking features and stuff. Like it's blurring the line between iPad and Mac that I think it's going to draw some people to the iPad who have not considered one before.
It's definitely being marketed as a creation device for anybody, you included, who are kind of like, you know, consumption, sure, iPads are great. Creation, maybe not so much. Maybe a lot of people just... simply didn't take advantage of that. So if you give somebody something that's more robust, I think iMovie on the new iPad Pro can run 3 4K streams and, concurrently.
And that's kind of how you want to work with iMovie.
Level.
That's how you want to work with GarageBand. There's suddenly this touch thing to me becomes very interesting. But what do you say, Dana, to people who say, oh, that's just a copy of the Surface? The keyboard really looks like it's a copy of the Surface.
It does.
Well, it is a little bit of a copy, and it definitely, and I think it's easier to be a little harder on Apple in that sense, just because Steve Jobs himself once panned the idea of a stylus. And
everybody Tim brought Cook, that up, but that was like 2007. That was a long time ago.
You know, and Tim Cook made his famous comment about how, what was it, people didn't want a device that combined a refrigerator and a microwave, something like that.
Yes.
So it's easy to be a little hard on them just because you kind of want to see them eat their words a little bit. But it is similar to the Surface in concept, just that it's this oversized tablet that you can use with a pen and this optional keyboard. And, you know, like the Surface, it's really a tablet first, I think, especially compared to the new MacBook, which also blurs the line, I would say, right, between tablet and laptop, just in the sense that that's a device that's really lightweight and it looks a little more like a tablet when it's shut, but that's really laptop first. And this is tablet first, kind of the way the Surface is.
Ben Thompson at Stratechery wrote a great article about this. By the way, he's going to be on Twit tomorrow, so we're going to ask him. And he says this isn't the Surface because iOS is a touch-first operating system. And I think I agree with him. This is a very important announcement because it's the first time we've had a touch-first, an operating system built from the ground up to be for multi-touch. I think the Pencil looks phenomenal, better than any stylus
phenomenal,
I've ever seen.
Phenomenal, but not cheap.
You know, at this point, you're still under $1,000 for both the iPad Pro and the Pencil. Pencil's, what, $100?
Yeah.
Charges in like 10 minutes, which is amazing, from the Lightning port on the iPad. I would get the Pencil. I would not get the keyboard because I think the keyboard is just kind of a sop to people who say, but I need a keyboard. This is not a computer like your dad's computer, like my computer. This, to me, is a touch-first computer. And
yeah,
Ben's point was, is you got to support developers who are going to make touch-first applications for this. He says iMovie, great, GarageBand, a revelation. But this is not a Fruit Ninja device. This is not a device for playing Fallout Shelter. This is a productivity tool, and you need the apps, and Apple has to adjust the App Store to make way for these app developers. Dana and Andrew, you both got to play with it. Were you impressed, Andrew, with the touch, with the pen?
Yeah, you know, I'm not an artist, so, you know, I can't speak, like, authoritatively about how it compares to different, like, active digitizers and all the different pens and things that are out there. But, you know, at one point, the guy who was showing me the Pencil, like, leaned over the tablet, put his entire forearm on there, and the screen just ignored it, was only paying attention to the Pencil input.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really good palm rejection. The tilt is really interesting. Like, if if you are drawing with a Pencil and then you tilt it, you get a very different line than if you're drawing with a tip. And the Pencil, the Apple Pencil, replicates that really, really interestingly. I mean, the only app I got to play with was like the basic drawing that they have in the built-in Notes app. But for some of like the Photoshop stuff that they demoed, I'd be really interested to see what artists and designers would do with this.
It's interesting they had all the medical people in there because I feel like, in a way, that's one market they're absolutely eyeing as hospitals and physicians who might use specialized software with this thing. I can't wait. I've said this for years on an iPad today. I can't wait to get my hands on an iPad Pro, right? You want one?
Well, my first reaction was gold iPad Pro for sure. Give it to me. And then
you're not going to travel with it. It's too big for
There's that. There's the idea that, you know, the stylus, as beautiful as it is and as much as I realize it works well, that's not for me. I'm not an artist. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that. I don't do any sort of, like, I don't even use pencils and pens anymore. So,
But iMovie, you do video editing. Wouldn't it be an interesting experience to use your hands to video edit instead of a mouse and keyboard? GarageBand, same thing. And it's big enough that you can have full-size controls. I feel like there's something happening here, that this could be a landmark device, really.
I think really, you know, I've got the 6 Plus, so this is something that has kind of cannibalized some of my iPad usage. When I'm just kind of sitting around at my house, I just kind of want to have a second screen where I'm watching a movie or something like that. The iPad Pro feels too big for that, though. And that is still what I want to use my iPad for. I want to kick back on the couch and kind of hold it and read stuff. And some of my colleagues, like male colleagues who are a lot bigger than me, you know, they took pictures of themselves holding the iPad Pro, and it looks ginormous.
Still looks big.
Yeah. It's a big device. And, yeah, the portability is a factor as well for anybody who likes to use their iPad when they're traveling. I'm one of them. So
I see.
Jury's out. I'm going to wait a little bit and see if it's something that my friends make me jealous enough about before I pull the trigger.
I feel like this could be a breakthrough product if the right software is developed for it. And I think Apple has to do something to make that happen. Is that your
hand, Andrew? I think there's a reason why they had so many third-party developers. I mean, they had Microsoft, of all people.
Yeah.
They had 3D for Medical. They had a couple of others up on stage showing off apps. I mean, I think this device really needs the third-party development community to, like, step up and show what's possible on it, I think.
And no accident that Microsoft was there, even though everybody was kind of shocked, because Microsoft is putting their touch-first Office on the iPad before anybody else. This also explains why, as in the past, you could only watch these keynotes on Apple devices, but this time, for the first time, Microsoft Windows 10 Edge browser was also allowed to stream it. Moving on, because that's the iPad Pro, but there was a lot to talk about. Apple TV, thoughts, Dana?
I was impressed by the voice demos that we all saw during the keynote, not just in terms of the accuracy, but I was impressed by the intelligence of the natural language search. A lot of the follow-up questions you could ask and keep whittling down your search results.
You could say, I want to see all the James Bond movies, and then say, and with Sean Connery, and it would narrow
exactly, it down. Yeah. And I think this is really something Apple needed to get into. I mean, if you look at what Amazon has been doing with its Fire TV, I think people really appreciate that. And I think it feels intuitive to a lot of people. And I think this is an area where Apple really needed to make progress, and it seems that it did.
Yeah, I'm at a disadvantage not having played with it, because from the outside it looks like, well, Fire TV has that. Mm-hmm. It looked like a Nintendo Wii, like, okay, bringing the Wii games Crossy Roads for two players back to the home isn't innovative. It felt like it was playing catch-up rather than innovating in that space.
There's something about the Apple TV that, I mean, I've always been a fan of it. I have one, you know, the
current
one.
But you probably also have a Roku, right?
I do, but I really don't use the Roku anymore for much.
Okay.
TechCrunch has a Roku app, but we don't have an Apple TV yet, but we will soon. And that's the thing that I think
that's exciting for me too.
That's the SDK, the fact that third-party developers will now be able to have apps. People like us can pick and choose and organize apps for our Apple TV. I think that is a really big deal. I think it's a bigger deal than a lot of us realize. It's kind of like everything that was big got small, and now everything that worked well small is now getting big again. I think that the Apple TV is going to create this need for apps that no one's even thought of that really need a big screen. Because right now, we've all gotten used to saying, okay, well, what looks good on a screen that's, you know, no bigger than phablet size, right? Or maybe iPad or tablet size.
I have to say, True Player Crossy Road does look like a lot of fun.
So I'm not going to play any games because that's not what I want to do in my living room. I want to chill. I want to chill out, not play Crossy Road.
iPad, Apple Watch, Apple TV. Oh, by the way, one more thing. We're doing new iPhones.
Yeah, right.
By the way, nothing we saw we didn't already know from the rumor blogs, right? Mm-hmm. Were there any surprises, Andrew, at all?
If you're really into the chip stuff, like the Apple A9, usually the rumor sites do not get into that kind of thing very often. But then again, Apple doesn't really tell us much either. So
the 9X on the iPad Pro, they said, was 1.8 times faster.
Right. Yeah. It's really interesting how they keep, like, not, they don't double every year, but they come close most
it's
years.
Kind of impressive.
And they're the only company that can use their chips, and yet they're one of the, like, most interesting mobile chip makers that I think there is right now. So I mean, in that sense, yeah, that was interesting. But as far as, like, the 3D touch, the new camera capabilities, I think pretty much everything else we already knew about.
You did the 3D touch. I'm very skeptical because I've used Force Touch on the watch and Force Touch on my MacBook, and it's confusing. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. I don't know if I've pressed hard enough. But everybody who was at the demo said, oh, no, this works much better. Was that your experience, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is just that the iPhone is more responsive than the watch just because it has so much more power behind it. And the new Taptic Engine and the 3D Touch feature, I think, is a little more granular than Force Touch is. Like, Force Touch, you're either pressing down hard or you're not. With 3D Touch, they're emphasizing the difference between, like, a light touch and a hard touch.
And it has feedback, right? So you know what you've done.
Right, yeah, it buzzes at you.
And it buzzes like harder if you've done the harder push and less hard.
Yeah, like it's pretty good at giving you feedback. So like if you were on the home screen, a lot of apps like the camera, photos, if you hard press on them, they'll give you what's basically like a right-click menu, like a contextual menu with some shortcuts. But if you try to do it on an app that doesn't support that, the phone will still buzz at you. It just like won't do anything. So it's still giving you feedback like based on what based on how you're touching it, like even if it doesn't actually do anything to touch it that way, you know?
I think comparing it to right click is good. It's sort of the thing, once you get used to it, it makes perfect sense, and you can't imagine having gone back. You have another layer of functionality.
I agree, and if that's how it works, I'll be much happier. It did not work that way on the watch or on the MacBook. You just didn't know what was going to happen, and you couldn't really tell how hard you'd pressed, so you didn't know if you were doing it. I disabled it. I thought, this is not much use. But Dana, the most important question, is that pink or is it rose gold?
I think it's pink. I don't want it to turn anyone off. You know, I was just reading before we got on the show that I was reading that the rose gold iPhone was leading pre-order. So,
everybody wants pink, to prove that they've got the new one.
That's it, right? It's a marker of the new generation.
Is that new?
I ordered it. I was just hoping it was really rose gold and not pink.
You got a pink iPhone?
No, I got a rose gold iPhone.
Good. It'll match your shirt.
This is salmon.
Oh,
I'm in deep trouble.
Suspenders. Wow. I think it's pretty.
What was the ordering experience like for any? Did anybody get online at 12:01?
I never get up at 3 a.m. I'm probably unlike any other tech journalist in that sense. I'll just get it when I get it. I think Andrew was saying he ordered one, though.
Yeah, I kind of, it's a ritualized thing, right? You get up on Twitter at 3 a.m. and the only people who are up are like the tech journalists who are like, oh, the site's down. It's not
working. We all tweet. But it's a lot better, you have to admit, than sitting on a lawn chair at 3 a.m. at some Apple store in the middle of nowhere, right?
Right, yeah.
That's what I did last time.
It is more punishing for the New Yorkers, isn't it?
3 a.m.
Because I'm like, midnight, you just stay up.
No, I didn't stay up.
That's not that hard.
Set the alarm.
On Friday. 3 a.m. is...
But I did. I was smart this time. I pre-filled all of the stuff on the App Store on the iPad. I thought that was my best shot. I was ready with both the website and all the carriers, just in case. It was a little scary because at about 3 hours before the opening, the whole site, all of Apple.com was gone.
Yeah.
That's not a good error.
Disconcerting.
Like, you know, href error, can't find page. I mean, like a bad error. I don't know what happened. By midnight, though, our time, it was seemed to be working but not available. And then about 12:04, 12:05, the app started working. And once I started the order process, it went pretty lickety-split, and I was able to get my new pink iPhone.
It's going to be real pretty. It is.
I figure you put it in a case anyway.
It's nice. It's not a color that I would want because I feel like it's, like, too pink. And no, see, but when you're... Let me finish. When you're a female, I think that, you know, there's so many pink gadgets that get pushed at us that some of us, not all of us, but some of us are like, we don't want that because it's like marketed too much to like, oh, it's for the ladies.
I'm just showing I'm comfortable in my masculinity.
And you are. You know, a man, especially who's gray, wearing pink is like a hot look. Look at Clooney.
Andrew Cunningham from Ars Technica, really nice to have you. Thanks for being here. Dana Wallman from Engadget. You both do the best coverage of gadgets out there, and I really appreciate your spending some time having actually had hands-on and sharing your experience with us here on the new Screensavers.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Take care. It's pink, huh? I just thought, oh, the color's off on the website. It's going to be more rose goldy because rose gold looks like more copper. It doesn't look like pink.
No.
Why do they call it rose gold? It's rose.
Well, it's less brassy. I don't know. Why does Apple do anything?
I know. Anyway.
You bought it.
I bought it. You know, I also, part of the reason I bought it is I thought, well, then in 2 weeks when it comes on the 25th. By the way, if you order now, it's 3 to 4 weeks out.
Yeah.
On almost all of them.
I didn't stay up last night.
You didn't either. You don't care.
I care.
Who's going to buy phones for you now that Daddy doesn't buy them anymore?
Wow. Wow.
Will TechCrunch buy you?
I mean, we obviously...
They probably just come...
We obviously have to
On the 25th, they have big boxes. They just come to the door and they just go to everybody here. Everybody have an iPhone.
Woo.
You get an iPhone and you get an iPhone.
You know, this guy, honestly, I really have... This is a sentimental device to me now. I love my 6 Plus. I dropped my 6 Plus on the toilet a couple weeks ago. Didn't even die.
Didn't even die.
No, it's amazing. A road warrior, and I'm not going to get rid of you just because there's a pink option. You're
as
good.
As you know, I'm mostly Android, but I'm very interested in the new iPhone. They fixed the keyboard problem because now they have a lowercase and uppercase on
the keyboard. Yeah, well, that's an iOS 9 thing.
Yeah, but that's a fix. Yeah. And then I want to do Facebook mentions, and the only way you can live stream to Facebook, you have to be a verified Facebooker, and you have to have an iPhone. They don't support Android, so.
That's dumb.
Well, it's just the way it is. So in about 2 weeks, expect a slew of cat videos from me on Facebook.
See, I used to be the cat video person, but now it's you.
I have cats.
Yeah. You see what happens, right? It sucks you in.
It is. It is.
You're never
I'm
the
like,
same.
I like...
unapologetic cat photos.
We're ready to buy 5 more.
Oh. I love that idea. Just a big cat.
Cats
party.
Everywhere.
Cats everywhere. Buy a new vacuum.
You know what? I'm filling a gap left by you. There's a hole in my heart.
Well.
And it's filled now with feline
good.
Pleasures.
It's basically the same.
Time for a call for help. Back to New York we go. Tim's on the line from Central New York. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Sarah. By the way, there's nothing wrong with salmon. I used to have a leisure suit in that
color. Oh, my God. Did you have an afro at the time?
A jaffro. Yes, I did. My wife burned the leisure suit once we started going together.
Yeah. Burned apparently she burned the hair as well.
That was quite a statement.
A pink leisure suit. Now, that's...
Salmon.
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 Salmon. It's salmon.
Yeah.
It's salmon.
It's salmon. What can we do for you, Tim?
That's rose gold, not pink.
It's...
Well...
Yeah.
The issue I have is I've got an iPhone, I've got an iPad, I've got an iTouch, I've got a MacBook Air.
Well, Tim Cook thanks you.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. Yeah. What happens is my phone rings and my iPad rings and my iPod Touch rings and...
I know. Isn't it amazing?
My Mac doesn't ring.
I feel like a Swiss clockmaker at midnight. Everything goes off when my phone rings.
Okay,
everything
so what? Yeah, so.
But your Mac doesn't ring.
My Mac does not ring, and I'm sitting here going. I'm most of the time sitting at my Mac. I mean,
right.
At the dining room table, like I am now, or I'm at the office and my phone is in the other room, or you know something else, or I'm at Starbucks and my phone's in the car, and. My wife is in the background making commentary.
I can hear her.
Yeah. Just... Oh, I can hear you, Tammy.
She's. I think. I might be wrong, but I think I heard her go, uh-uh.
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Go, Tammy.
She's usually the one who's doing these things because she's a popular kids writer.
Oh, really? What does she write?
Tamara Pierce. She writes fantasy for teenage girls.
Oh, my gosh. That's what's wonderful.
Oh, we
I'm not a teenage girl, even though I am wearing pink, but...
Salmon.
Yeah, salmon. Yeah. But
it's more
but
of
that's,
a puce.
I bet you there are more than a few people watching go, Tamara Pierce's husband's on the phone. That's
yeah,
nice.
I'm pretty sure your daughter might at least know of Tammy. Even
what's
if
the
she
series?
It's called The Song of the Lioness is one of her universes. Well, actually, the Tortola universe. And it's basically European medieval fantasy.
Isn't it supposed to be your phone call?
Well, yes, it is, Tammy. And the other is the circle of magic.
I want to read this. This looks great. I love that kind of stuff. So
you can find it actually full cast audio. Bruce Koval, you know, my teacher is an alien.
Yeah.
His company, his audiobook company, did a number of audiobooks of Tammy's novels. But I was in them, and Tammy narrated, and as well as having written the original books. And actually, Bruce Koval's in them as well.
Fun.
But that's not really why I call.
I think, I'll be honest with you, I'm pretty sure my daughter read Alana. So I think that we do have a fan in the family.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
You'll find the audiobooks on Audible.
I will
listen
to them,
and I know you're a huge Audible
fan. Absolutely, yeah. So you're trying to do what Apple calls handoff, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the ability...
It's like when they announce continuity that was...
I'm so confused between continuity and handoff.
I think it's like continuity is the concept and handoff is actually the verb, right? Like you're handing off between devices, which is part of Apple's continuity...
Got it.
Feature.
Now, of course, this requires Yosemite. Are you using OS 10, 10.9?
Yep.
Or 10.10, I guess. Yep.
10.10. I just checked it. Well, okay. I actually checked it before I came on.
To use Handoff, sign into the same iCloud account on all devices, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Turn on Bluetooth on all the devices you want to use. You've obviously done that because when your phone rings, the other devices are ringing. Make sure that's true also on your Macintosh. Actually, the Mac needs Wi-Fi, so make sure you're all on the same Wi-Fi network.
Mm-hmm.
That may be one of the issues. Let's see. You can multi-track. I think what you have to do in on the Macintosh, I believe, if you want to make phone calls or answer phone calls, you have to be using FaceTime. Your FaceTime has to be signed into that account. Go into your FaceTime settings and make sure that that phone number, your iPhone phone number, shows up as one of your FaceTime numbers, okay?
Okay.
Apparently, Wi-Fi calling needs to be off, which is too bad because that's a nice feature that iPhones offer on T-Mobile.
I'm on T-Mobile, and I know. I love it.
So disable Wi-Fi, believe it or not, disable Wi-Fi calling. Yep.
If you're using T-Mobile and you're using Wi-Fi calling, can't
and
have it both.
Then you should be able to, in contacts, in Safari, or in FaceTime, type a phone number in and make a call, and that won't obviously come from your computer. It'll come from your iPhone. Similarly, once you can do that, you should have your computer should ring when your iPhone rings, and you should be able, I get this, it says pick up or, you know, hang up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually talk on, I've done this on the iPad in the loo. I shouldn't probably say
likewise. That. That's how I know it works.
Nobody wants to know that.
That's a little too much information.
Yeah, you know what I've always noticed? I have all of my iPhone, my iPad, and my MacBook are all on the same iCloud account using FaceTime. And my MacBook always rings first.
Yeah.
Like, there's a solid almost 5 seconds.
Isn't
where
that interesting?
My phone hasn't done anything yet, but I know someone's calling me because I see the notification on my MacBook.
So Apple has, and I've been showing this, a support document, HT204681. HT204681. This describes the process step-by-step that you have to go through. I'm betting it's something simple like maybe Wi-Fi calling is turned on your iPhone. You also have to turn off iPhone cellular calls, which is a little concerning, but that's happened to me. It works fine. What does that mean, turn off iPhone cellular? Oh, no, that can't be true.
Yeah, that...
That can't be
you
true.
You need that.
That's if you don't... If you want to use your Mac all the time or something.
Yeah, because otherwise you'd have to be turning it back on every time you left your Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, that
and
makes
that,
no sense.
That doesn't...
Yeah.
I don't do that.
Anyway, I hope that helps. There's a few settings and a few things you might want to watch out for. Where are you in Central New York?
Actually, Syracuse.
Syracuse.
Same town that Aaron Sorkin went to college in.
Yeah, a lot of people do. Are orange men, as they say.
Well, we're not orange men, but we live.
I'm a pink man myself.
Salmon.
Hey, a salmon. Thank you to Tim and Tammy from Syracuse. It's great to talk to you.
Hi, Tim.
Great to talk to you both.
And I hope that helps get everything working.
I hope it does, too. You have a good day, Leo. Sarah. Right.
Bye.
I see Tammy's books were right there on the bookshelf back
there.
I swear to God, I know that Abby read Alana. I'll have to ask her. I met the guy. Would you like to be on the show? Ask a question? We would really like it. Here's how.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
I know there's one thing you miss at TechCrunch, and that's your regular dose of Nature Box.
Oh, I thought you were going to say all of my old coworkers.
Nah, you don't miss them, but I bet you miss salted caramel pretzel pops.
Yes, I do.
Or I know you love the Big Island pineapple.
Mm.
Oh,
I just
those.
Like the caramel better.
Those you ate, what was that we ate? Like, all of them. It was
peanut
like
butter nom noms?
Yeah. Really no, like there was those. The yogurt pretzels.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, like your last day here. I think we kind of drowned our sorrows in yogurt pretzels. Anyway, Nature Box, it's good for when you're happy, it's good for when you're sad, it's good for anybody, it's the best way to get your snacks mailed to your door each and every month. How about a whole wheat chocolate chip cookie bite or a strawberry lemonade fruit square?
Mm-hmm.
You want to get smart about snacking, and Nature Box is great because it is full of flavor without any of the junk, no high fructose corn syrup, no artificial colors or flavors. Zero trans fats, just fun, flavorful snacks made with ingredients you could trust. And by the way, you'll never get bored because they already have 100 More than 100 healthy and crave-worthy options and new brand snacks, brand new snacks every single month. Yeah, you, look at that. Those are
whole wheat vanilla animal cookies?
Yeah, I think so. Get your first box on us, naturebox.com/twit. A trial of your favorite, of their favorite, most popular snacks delivered to your door. By the way, once you sign up for NatureBox, you can go on there and you can choose. And you can choose gluten-free. You can choose vegan. They're sweet, savory,
spicy. Why are animal cookies so good?
They're just great, aren't they?
They're just great.
Yeah. Animal crackers in my bed.
Yeah. Talk and eat, man. Come on. Be a cool.
NatureBox. I don't have a spit bucket. NatureBox. That's what they do in the movies. You know, they pretend to eat.
I just want to eat.
And then the trick is over, and they go, but see, NatureBox, you wouldn't do that. So good. NatureBox.com/twit. We thank them for their support. Of the new screensavers. Go there right now. Get your NatureBox. You can take this with you if you want. Bring it back to the folks at TechCrunch. Show them what it was like working at Twit.
I will.
Free snacks.
I'll be like, watch out.
Have you ever heard the term dark web?
Yeah. I have.
Do you know what it means?
Well, it's where a lot of stuff happens behind the scenes, and a lot of really smart hackers hang out, but a lot of really bad hackers hang out, too.
Apparently, even Facebook's on the dark web these days. We're going to find out with Adrian Lamo, one of our favorite hackers, mm-hmm. used to be on the screensavers all the time.
I don't know if I would say.
There he is. He's snuck up on us. We'll do that in just a second.
He's my favorite hacker.
I tend to do that.
Shh, Adrian.
Or just a nice guy.
He's in the dark web. But first,
you can't see him.
Megan Maroney with some keyboard shortcuts on your Chromebook. Stay right here.
I am Megan Maroney, host of i5 for the iPhone, Tech News Tonight, and iOS Today. And I love the Chromebook. It's a no-nonsense device, great for anyone already enmeshed in the Google environment. It's great for students, too. If you want to master your Chromebook, you're going to want to learn some shortcuts. I could show you my favorites, but frankly, I don't have the time. And who's to say my favorite shortcuts are your favorite shortcuts? To see all the Chromebook keyboard shortcuts available to you, hit Control plus Alt plus question mark. For more shortcuts, hold down the Control key. For even more shortcuts, hold down the Alt key. And for even more shortcuts, hold down the Shift key. To get rid of the shortcut guide, hit Escape.
Thank you, Megan Maroney. You can see her every week on TN2, Tech News Tonight, every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, right against you. It's a head-to-head battle for the news attention.
It's not.
And then 7 p.m. Eastern time. And then, of course, on iOS Today, we have a lot of fun in i5 for the iPhone.
Is that what it's called now, iOS Today?
Well, yeah, because we wanted to roll everything.
You wanted
everything.
To bring it up, open it up.
Yeah, because we always had trouble because if it's not on the iPad, if it's only on the iPhone, and then that with the Apple Watch, you really want to have, talk about, how does it work on the Apple Watch?
That's good.
Yeah.
It's a nice, well-rounded hour. A week, rather
it's
than
fabulous.
Being like, well, should we cover this iPhone app? I don't know.
Yeah, we have fun. Yeah. We have a lot of fun.
Good.
It's really, I miss you, but it's fun. Megan's great. You know, I've known her almost as long as I've known you, I think.
Well, all things must evolve and grow. So
you know who was
I'm
on
we're all happy.
The old screensavers 5 times?
Who?
It's Mr. Adrian Lamo. He was on, there he is. Hey, Adrian, how are you?
Howdy, Leo. It's been quite a while.
Wednesday, I don't want to bring up bad tidings, but it was the 12th anniversary of your surrender to U.S. Marshals in Sacramento.
It was, and you know what? I had actually forgotten about it until I saw a Twitter account like Today in Tech.
There you go.
Mentioned it, and I thought, wow, it's the most wonderful time of the year again.
What were you arrested for, Adrian?
All kinds of things, wonderful things, terrible things, but primarily hacking into the New York Times, Microsoft, and LexisNexis. I compromised their various networks. I contacted them. I offered to fix them for free. Obviously, none of this makes what I did right. I always figured that as long as I was breaking the law, I should do it in the most honest way possible. But honesty and good intentions do not excuse lawbreaking.
Did you do time?
I did 6 months house arrest and 2 years of probation. I could have done, in theory, if all things had gone wrong, up to 15 years. At the time that I pled guilty, I could have done up to 5 years. And under the terms of my plea, I could have done 6 months to a year. However, based on what I said to the judge, my feelings about the case, about what I had done, she chose to let me serve the time in the community rather than in custody. I felt that I could do more good there. And you know, since that time, I've gotten more into journalism, writing, still about hacking in the hacking community, but not of it. I've done some things that have been controversial, but then again, the things that I've done have always been controversial in some sectors.
Yeah, I never considered you a black hat by any means. You know, maybe you weren't completely a white hat hacker, but you were certainly trying to find vulnerabilities with the intent of fixing them, not with the intent of stealing. You never, you know, nowadays with the hacks of Target and I've blocked the name out,
Ashley Madison.
Yeah. I just don't want to think about it. This is really kind of Sony. These are more malicious hacks. This is not what you were involved in. I think times have changed a lot. We brought you on. Anyway, welcome back. It's great to see you. I've been following you, as Sarah has, on Facebook. And your great Quora. I guess you call it a blog. You post on Quora a lot. Quora.com/Adrian-Lamo. We wanted to ask you about the dark web. And, in fact, this was the article I saw. Is it safe to browse the deep dark web? What is the dark web, Adrian?
The dark web is the portion of the deep web that is made up of Tor hidden services. Tor is an acronym for the Onion Router. It's an encrypted subset of the internet that is used for hosting essentially anything that can be hosted on the internet, the regular internet, but it is anonymized and the communications are encrypted so that you never know exactly who you're communicating with or who is communicating with you. And this can be in equal parts a wonderful thing and a terrible thing, much indeed like human nature. It's kind of representative of human nature. The dark web is not in and of itself good right. or bad. It's what people do with it.
We often hear about the Silk Road, which was, I guess, on the dark web, right?
Yeah, it's like the well-known drug site that right. sort of got a lot of people understanding what this was in the first place.
Weirdly enough, Facebook also has a Tor site.
So indeed they do.
I'm not sure. Why does Facebook?
I didn't realize that.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, until
they did
today.
That, I think they did that last year.
I think they do that as kind of a shout out to privacy concerns, but the reality of it is that having a dark website for a company like Facebook is not really a huge investment in privacy, given how they can track you in a multitude of other ways with their ad network, with their careful analysis of who you follow, who follows you, who your friends are, what they do, what content they like. All of the degrees of separation between you and many other people, really their interest has never been in what address you come from. It's in who you are, who you communicate with, your entire lifestyle. You're still giving that up when you communicate with Facebook, and I'm certainly not telling anyone not to. That's a personal choice, a personal call. I personally do use Facebook
yeah.
for certain things.
Yeah.
I have my personal public Facebook page at facebook.com/felon, which I felt was descriptive.
I'm surprised there wasn't more competition for that address.
You'd be surprised.
So should we worry about the dark web? I mean, why not just do it all out in the public? Why do we need a dark web?
Because on the regular internet, you are very dependent on a wide array of people. You're dependent on your credit card processor when you pay for services. You're dependent on your internet service provider not to monitor you and sell logs of what you do. You're dependent on the websites you visit not to track you. And the dark web is not a cure-all, but it establishes a framework whereby you can visit sites, you can create content, and it is not inherently something that tracks you, profiles you, and makes it easy to ascertain who you are and create a a profile of you. It, you still have to take measures. You, for instance, Tor users who access the regular web have been in the past tracked by the National Security Agency using something so quotidian as targeted advertisements, because advertisements are one of the intelligence community's best tools. They were created by the marketing community to be intensely personal, intensely discriminating, able to target very specific people and find out what they do, what is better for an intelligence officer.
Adrian, is it frustrating, you know, if you're somebody who is accessing the dark web regularly because you truly care about privacy and security and the fact that, yes, something as, you know, innocuous as an advertisement being targeted at you still, that that does have meaning, and some people don't feel that that should be happening without their, you know, consent or that sort of thing. To get kind of lumped into, oh, well, you're probably trafficking weapons, or there's a drug selling thing going on, because, of course, that is what being anonymous can also be good for if you're interested in that sort of thing. Is it frustrating to be lumped in with basically criminals? Because I think a lot of people hear dark web and they think, well, that's for the bad guys.
Just the name dark implies it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that door kind of swings both ways. I mean, as many of your viewers probably know, I have in the past worked with the government, worked with the military on national security issues. And people hear government, they hear military, they hear counterintelligence, and they assume that it's automatically out to get them, out to infringe their privacy, out to put horse porn on their grandmother's computer to set her up later at a bridge club. Both sides are guilty of dehumanizing the other, of lumping them all into one category,
right,
that is assumed to be doing one thing, to be monolithic, to all be members of the same club and incapable of having personal agency that extends beyond that. And no, not everyone that uses the dark web is a drug dealer. Not every hacker is out to undermine national security. Not every intelligence officer is out to break down civil liberties. Not every intelligence analyst is out to catch hackers just for the hell of it. People are individuals. The internet is made up of individuals just as much as the dark web is. And from that perspective, the dark web is not so much different from the regular web, not so much different from the regular web. You have to exercise caution as much as you would anywhere else. From a certain perspective, it can be somewhat safer because services from like the Tor browser or platforms like the Tor browser can be built to be safer. They deny certain active services like Flash or Java from executing by default, which are frequently used to target and identify users.
I watch Mr. Robot, so I understand this stuff. According to Mr. Robot, Tor is not that safe because whoever controls the entry and the exit point can identify you. Is that right?
Yes, but, you know, that's also true about these ubiquitous things called web servers and routers.
Oh, them. So you're saying it's a little bit more private.
I'm not saying it, well, in the sense that with a web server, they can tie you back to an IP address on the open web. They can trace route you. They can see who your internet service provider is. They can look you up in your local registry, whether it's Aaron or APNIC or any other registrar with some.
Sure,
such
you're
as,
not anonymous on the general World Wide Web, obviously.
But with Tor and hidden services, at least, you are not identifiable by default. You have to commit the first sin of identifiability on the dark web,
using a credit card, for instance.
It is to screw up. It is incumbent on you,
right,
to make a mistake instead of,
right,
automatically opting into being identified just by existing. That's, I guess, the binary difference between the two. On the regular internet, everyone knows you're a dog. On the dark web, you have to tell people you're a dog.
Right. What do you if somebody wants to dabble in the dark web? Man, that sounds scary.
Yeah, where do we go?
Is a Tor where do I go? Is a Tor browser the best way to do it?
Yes, the Tor browser is the simplest way. You can also, on most platforms, download simply the Tor package itself and set it up with your regular web browser. It usually runs as a SOX proxy on port 9050 or 9150. You can set it up to work with other proxies of your choice. I personally prefer to use it with the browser of my choice because I have my browser pretty customized for purposes of security. But for people who are just starting out, dabbling, as you say, using the Tor browser package is probably the better choice because it provides a baseline of security that most people would most likely not think of their own accord.
What do you use to find stuff on the dark web? Is there a dark Google?
There are various search engines, and you would probably find them by searching on the regular Google for pages called the Hidden Wiki or Tor Hidden Wiki, which you will usually outline pages that exist on the dark web. And it's kind of like how the methodology that I would use to hack something, I would start out from an initial point of information that listed a few sites. So you would find a hidden wiki site that might or might not be out of date, but you would find a few that worked. They would list a few others. You would find others that listed a few others, and you would branch out because the nature of the dark web is such that none of the directories are universal. You can't index it all, but you can crawl it yourself based on your own interests, your own passions, your own prejudices. What you bring to it is what you find, and it will be just as enlightening or disturbing as you make it.
One last question. How dangerous it is for me to do this in a couple of ways. Am I going to attract the attention of the NSA by doing this? And am I going to expose myself to dark forces?
Well, isn't it the idea that you get to roam free, not under the watchful eye of the NSA if you're on the dark web?
Yeah, but we know the NSA, for instance, owns some Tor endpoints, right?
Well, to be frank, NSA does monitor Tor users extra carefully. They may.
Yeah. It's like using encryption, it's a red flag.
They may store traffic retroactively as well in order to pay attention to it in the future if it turns out that it's of interest. But the only way to beat that is for more users to get involved, get interested. Right now, a decade ago, the red flags were far and few between. Today, the red flags are a multitude.
Right.
If more users continue to get involved, get interested, to check it out, to see what's this all about, to use encryption in their daily routine, it'll become a mob. And perhaps a decade from now, it will become a movement, and there will be no point in monitoring because it could easily be everybody.
Yeah, I know that when I use PGP in my daily correspondence, that every single one of those emails is going to get stored by the NSA. But the more of us that do it, as you say, the more noise there'll be, the less useful that will be. Hey, it's good to talk to you again, Adrian. I think it sounds like you're doing well.
Definitely better than I have been at points in the past. I've faced some challenges, and I've come out on the other side a somewhat different but stronger person.
He's on Quora, quora.com/Adrian-Lamo, or at six. He has the world's best Twitter handle.
The number six.
How'd you get six?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of a double feature. I've always been a fan of the old TV series The Prisoner, number six.
You are number six.
It was number one.
And I'm also a very big fan of the new Battlestar Galactica. I watched the old Battlestar Galactica as well when I was a kid on the Sci-Fi Channel and it ran reruns. But the new Battlestar Galactica, I was always a fan of the nuanced character of the blonde number six and her relationship with the not exactly irredeemable Gaius Baltar. I've always felt that
he's Baltar. Are you Baltar?
I don't think of myself as anyone in particular except for Adrian Lamo, but I'm a fan of the idea that there's nobody that, if you dig deep enough, you won't find some act of theirs that redeems them. Nobody's a one-dimensional character.
Come back. Spend some time on triangulation, would you? I'd love to talk about Chelsea Manning and what you're doing. And there's a lot to talk about with you. So if you have some time, we'd like to spend more time with you. Thank you, Adrian.
Thanks, Adrian.
I would love to catch up. Thank you very much for having me.
Adrian Lamo. And if you want to send him secure email, keybase.io/comsec. I'm also on Keybase. It's a great way to spread your PGP key, your GPG key. Keybase.io/comsec.
There's a little bit of just talking about the dark web and some of the websites that we were looking at where you're kind of getting directories that just remind me of the early days of the internet
in
general.
Me too. It's exactly
my thought.
Because
most people are like, what? What are you doing?
In the early days of the internet, there was no global directory. Yeah. You would gopher to a site, and then you would gopher to another site, and you would follow the links down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, and the who kind of got it were, you know, a few steps ahead of the general public.
I think you're exactly right.
It's kind of, it's like the old days. It's nostalgic, really.
It's fun to see Adrian again. He was many times on the old screensavers. Good to have him back on the new screensavers. Now, are you ready to talk earthquakes? Why would you want to report an earthquake, and how would you do it? Our earthquake expert, Julian Lozos, has the story.
Hi, I'm Julian Lozos. I am at Seismogenic on Twitter, and here's my tip for reporting an earthquake, whether or not you felt it. If you live in California, you've probably been woken up by an earthquake and wanted to check what was going on. Well, instead of just going to the USGS site and looking, please click that link that says, "Did you feel it?" Your description of what you felt is a really useful tool for us understanding exactly what happened in terms of the ground motion in that earthquake. And even if you didn't feel it, even if you woke up and slept a very nice sleep and then saw your Twitter exploded with, "Oh my God, did you feel the earthquake?" Go and tell us. Not knowing if you didn't feel it, or knowing if you didn't feel it, is just as important as knowing what you did feel. So again, that's "Did you feel it?" Please fill it out.
our resident seismologist, great to see Julian. Every other week, every week or so, he's great. I'm really going to get him back and talk about the big one. But first, coming up. Feline facial recognition. Kitty Dar. I'm excited about this. Before we talk about that, though, let me remind you about our sponsor, ITPro.TV. ITPro.TV is a great solution for anybody who's in IT and wants to polish their skills or wants to get into IT. Sometimes you got to get that job. You got to get those certs. You got to study for the certs. Going to a technical college is very expensive. Buying the materials can be expensive. But there is no more engaging or more affordable way to polish your IT skills to get that cert than IT Pro TV. They're dedicated exclusively to the world of information technology, and they are fabulous. They kind of model themselves after Twit, and I was very glad to see it. Tim and Don have been doing IT training for a long time. They wanted to build a studio where they could do this content. They now have two studios, 50 hours of new programming every week. There's Don Pezzett. They stream live, on demand, worldwide, via Chromecast. They have a Roku app. Actually, the new iOS and Roku app are great because you can pick up where you left off. The episode libraries are getting bigger all the time. Well, with 50 new hours every week, you can imagine. Apple, Microsoft, Cisco, A+, CCNA, Security Plus. They've got the great ethical hacker training for the CEH certificate. Hacking Forensics Investigator. There's a job. You would have a job instantly. Cryptography. Sean Philip Oriano teaches those. He does a great job. You get things like the Virtual Machine Sandbox Lab, so with any HTML5 browser, you can configure and run a Windows server and clients. You don't have to own Windows. You don't even have to have a Windows machine. The Measure Up practice exams are included. They're worth $79, so you could take the test before you take the test. You could talk with hosts during the shows, and they have web-based Q&As like study groups. So you can really polish up your skills. There is, if you're interested, corporate and group pricing available at itpro.tv. And their clients include Harvard and MIT and UCSD and Stanford. Here's the deal. Check out itpro.tv/NSS. You'll see that subscriptions normally are $57 a month, $570 for a year. But when you use our offer code NSS30, you'll get a free 7-day trial. And 30% off your subscription forever for the lifetime of your account. If you buy an entire year, that's $400 for a whole year, less than $40 a month. It's a great deal. All this week and next, they're recording new courses on CompTIA's Project Plus and the MCSA for Windows 10. All you need is a basic account, and you can watch their live stream free Monday through Fridays, 9:30 a.m. Eastern time for the throughout the day. And they're also going to Spiceworks 2015, the Spice World IT Conference in Austin. That's September 23rd through the 25th. If you see them at Spice World, wave to Tim and Don. I just think they're great. I really love what they're doing for us, for those of us who want to get those skills. They're fans of Twit, and we're fans of IT Pro. Go to itpro.tv/NSS. Use the code at NSS30 to try it free for 7 days and save 30% for the lifetime of your account. You ready for the Kitty Dar? Sarah Lane has a story. Sarah?
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about this because, you know, the last time I was on the Screensavers, the new Screensavers, I got the cat segment, and today is the second cat
not
segment.
Not your typecast or anything.
You guys know what I like. I'm totally cool with that. I'm here with Tomomi Imura, who you might know as Girly Mac. That's sort of been your blog name, I guess.
Right. Your Twitter name or, like, any names, GitHub name.
Yeah, it's your internet name. Yeah. And you're actually on the show today. We're going to talk about a few things, but I want to start off with the Raspberry Pi Kitty Cam, which is something that you built. You have a cat. You obviously want to monitor your cat when you're not around. And show me what you're holding and explain how you made it.
All right. So this is my fun little project. You know, I've been working on, like, weekends and free time called Kitty Cam. It's a Raspberry Pi camera with a cat facial detection. So the hardware is Raspberry Pi 2 with a camera module and a PIR motion sensor. So what it does, you know, basically what it does is it detects motion. Mm-hmm. So whenever it detects something moving around, I usually set this by a cat dish. So whenever something's around, my cat's around, and the software triggers a camera to take a photo. Then it has some image processing. So once, you know, the cat face or cat body is detected, it's sent to the cloud storage service. Mm-hmm. I'm using Cloudinary. And at the same time, I'm publishing this data, which is a timestamp when the photo was taken and a URL of the, you know, photo to send it to the storage by using PubNub. That's a data streaming service, so I can establish some sort of real-time connection. So I have separated a web page. Yeah, that's a web page that subscribes the data to send it to that server, so you can monitor the cat the real-time, and that's on browser, so you can basically access it anywhere, anytime.
So it's motion detection. You said it can be convenient to put it down by the kiddie bowl. If if somebody's, like, in your apartment, like, drinking out of the kiddie bowl, it might confuse a person for a cat, or does it somehow know when it's a cat and
has
not
to be
some
cat.
Other kind of animal?
Yeah. So I'm actually wrote this with Node.js, and the Raspberry Pi doesn't come with Node.js from beginning, but it's a Debian-based Raspbian OS, which is, you know, you can do pretty much anything you can do in Linux. So I can just install Node.js. That means all the, NPM open software is available. So there is some open source software called KittyDar, which is a cat facial detection.
Radar for kitties.
Yeah.
KittyDar. You
right,
heard it here. KittyDar.
So that detects only cats. It doesn't detect human or dogs.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And this is some of this is just your design as well, right?
Oh, it's Lego. So it's a Lego-compatible case called Smarty Pie. I think it was a Kickstarter project initially, but I think I got it off the Amazon. Now it's, they're successfully funded, so it's on Amazon. So, yeah, it's nice, right? So I can put some Lego. So I use these pieces to hold this, PIR sensor, but it's kind of loose wires inside. So, yeah.
All right, well, we happen to have a cat just here in the studio. This is Venom.
Hi, Venom.
She and I don't know each other very well, so hopefully she won't scratch my eyes out. But since we've got her here, I thought, we could kind of see how this goes in real time. Venom, try to look as cute as possible.
Okay, I have to run this software.
This is your moment, little love.
So I'm going to stay staging this pie from my computer here. Oh, it's getting.
Oh, there she is. Oh, my gosh, that's so cool. That is so cool. The kitty cam's like, there it is. There's a human, but let's drop the human out. Wow, that's so cool. It's interesting. On your blog, Girly Mac, you actually have, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about now, but you've got all sorts, you've been a a Mac community member for a really long time. And you have this really cool story about how back in the day when Apple seemed sort of doomed.
Oh, yeah.
That you and some friends bought a bunch of Apple stock for,
oh my God.
For when it was like 25 bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, Apple's a completely different company now. And so it's like you are an Apple faithful and you've really seen a lot of things change.
Yeah.
You know, becoming a mobile developer. And I don't know. What do you think about the last week or so and the direction that Apple's going in? I mean, do you still feel like do you still have this love for Apple now that they don't really need the support
of
the community
so
as much anymore?
I still love Mac. I'm using Mac for myself. But you know what? I really do not like iDevices. So I'm an Android user myself. So I used to be really diehard, Apple fangirl. But to be honest, not anymore.
And do you think that that's just because that you got more options with Android? Or why do you think that ended up happening?
Actually, it's a weird story. So I used to be working at Palm, and I was a developer for WebOS. Mm-hmm. So I thought WebOS was, far better than iOS, right?
Right on.
Yeah, so I'm like, you know what? And I just stick with what? Simply wish we had a better hardware back in the time. And we failed, and I had to move on. But still, some of my colleagues back in the times are working in Android team now. Actually, my former boss is a head of design director over there.
Okay.
So kind of feel more familiar using Android. So I'm bored it.
Yeah. Well, luckily we have options. Yeah. Now, if somebody says, I love this Raspberry Pi Kitty Cam, I'd like to, buy one, or I'd like to make one for myself. Do you have instructions online on how somebody could make their own? Or
So I'm actually really, I'm thinking about writing whole, step-by-step tutorials. But so far, I just only have my source code available on GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's on github.com/girlymac/apri-kittycam.
Cool.
So it's the entire source code there and has an instruction, how to install dependency and Node.js, using NPM packages and such. Yeah. So you can pretty much follow the direction, but I get some reports. So a lot of people already have tried, And apparently, if you are using older Raspberry Pi,
it's not working quite
as
well.
It works, but it takes 20 minutes to do the face detection.
I see.
Yeah. So because memory is half as much. So
you're better off with the newer.
Yeah, the newest Raspberry Pi 2, I recommend.
I'm going to assume that this is not something that you're doing full time. What do when you're not building kitty cams?
So, actually, I kind of ripped off this idea from my interns over the summer. I was mentoring interns. So I'm working at a company called PubNub.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a data streaming network. So basically, we take the infrastructure of, a real-time connection. So you can use that as, creating some chat rooms, to maybe multiplayer gaming, or some IoT, stuff. It can be maybe talking toaster or whatever. So I'm working as a developer evangelist.
Mm-hmm.
So many times I got a chance to create some cool stuff. Although I didn't spend any of my work time to make this, but I just try to create some fun demos and blog about it so people can, just replicate or maybe get a better idea than what I provided and use, our technology.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I was telling you before the segment, I know PubNub because it's right next to my gym. We found out that we go to the same gym in San Francisco, so now I've got a friend at the gym. before we wrap up, there is something that someone may not realize that they know you for, but that is the HTTP status cats, which is, of course, a variety of statuses that are represented by cats. And you actually have a Flickr account that shows all of these, and they are hysterical. For example, we've got, the cat, the 200, is just that's just a funny looking cat.
Yeah,
but if you keep scrolling, some of these, depending on, how much you know about these statuses, some of them will be more familiar than others. But they're so good. Did you just find internet pictures of cats that sort of spoke to these variety of errors?
There was a so I told you earlier I was working for WebOS and then later on acquired by HP, and we had some doom days. I had nothing to do, but I still had to be in office. I was bored, so I started browsing and saw a lot of cat photos, and then I'm like, why don't I just convert those cat photos into the HTTP error codes, because
I'm a web dev, so I'm dealing with this error code all the time.
Right,
and I always
right.
forget which one's which. So I'm like, yeah, why not?
I love it.
Yeah. There's an API for that, too. It's an http.cat. Like, it's really .cat domain.
That's so good. That's so good. I love it. It's locked. That's good. What do you think it is about cats that are so descriptive of a variety of fails, internet fails? What is it about cats in general that works so well on the internet? Because I know you have a cat. You're a cat yeah. lover. I am, too. Leo now is as well. I mean, it just... They're just so perfect for the sort of thing.
Yeah.
But why?
Oh, my gosh. I honestly don't know, but... Well, they're funny.
Just one? Right?
Yeah, just one. Actually, two or four is... Sure, the two cats. I used to have more cats, but you know, cats don't live forever, sadly. So
that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
So
oh,
that's Milo
that was the
Sandy.
Other one. Gosh, you really yeah. have your other cat looked like my cat too. Yeah, we've got like parallel cat lives. So, I love it. 202 accepted. I like that one too. Love it. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you
for
having
being
me
here and yeah. explaining this kitty cam. I mean, it's not just the fact that it's a kitty cam. It's just. It's a really good idea. It's a really good idea, and you obviously love what you do, and you're good at it. So, Tomomi Imura, Girly Mac, thank you so much for being here.
Much.
It was really fun. Next time I come on the Screensavers again, I now expect sort of a cat, a dog.
Yeah.
It's going to be a dog segment.
No, you'll get a cat segment.
All right. Cat segment, or I'm not coming back. All right. Coming up next, we're going to answer more tech questions in Call for Help. But first... Before you post another photo to social media, before you do that, here's a tip from community strategist Jono Bacon.
My name is Jono Bacon, and I'm a community strategist, and I have a bit of a tip about social media. Now, whenever you're going to post to Twitter or to Facebook or to Google Plus or anything else, always put an image with your message, and it's because it stands out more from the crowd. But with Facebook specifically, make sure that your images are 505 pixels by 505 pixels in size. The reason for that is that that gives you the maximum amount of space for a Facebook post, and also make sure that the image that you have is very high contrast, such as white text on a black background, because when people are scrolling through all of their stuff, that is going to really stand out from the crowd, and you're going to get a higher number of impressions and a higher number of clicks.
Tomomi and I are having a little moment. We're just talking about WebOS.
WebOS.
Long lamented, you know. And she's Girly Mac on GitHub. You can, if you have Node and it's easy to install it, get the Node Package Manager on there and a Raspberry Pi, and you could put a kitty cam on your Lego set.
I need that.
Yeah, because somebody knocks at the door, you want to know if it's a cat.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And you could say, just smile for the kitty cam, and then you'd know.
Right, yeah.
And if it's not, you just don't open it.
Exactly. We're going to put a Raspberry Pi outside my apartment building, which just keeps getting broken into.
By kitties.
Well, no.
In my experience, they're going for the kibble. just you gotta keep your eye on the kibble.
I love it.
Time for a call for help. David is on the line from Oklahoma City. Hello, David.
Hey, David.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
We're doing great. Are you in the Civil Air Patrol, sir?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you for your service to the United States of America.
Well,
are you still active?
I was 20 years active duty Air Force, and now I last 13 years with the Civil Air Patrol training cadets.
Fantastic. That's great. That must be a lot of fun for you. What do you fly?
Actually, the Civil Air Patrol only flies, at least where we're at, C-1 or Cessna 172s and Cessna 182s, which is basically single-engine prop.
And how old are the kids you're teaching?
Anywhere from 12 years of age to 18 years of age.
So cool. Would you take a 58-year-old?
Yeah, they'd probably fly in a heartbeat.
I'd love to do it. Hey, let's get to your question. What did you want? What can I do for you? What did you want to know? What can we do for you, David?
Well, we've been living la vida tired here lately.
I hear that, bro.
Besides my day job, which is I'm a technical contractor with the government as my day job, but I also volunteer, obviously, with the Civil Air Patrol. And volunteer with Race Across America, and I'm also the tech support person for my entire extended family, which includes the whole neighborhood.
Yes, of course.
And so what I'm trying to do is I've got one cell phone, and I really don't want to be adding additional – I don't like using landlines, and I don't want to have to go through the phone company, AT&T, whoever, to add extra lines to my account. But so I'm trying to find a way to get separate phone numbers for these different activities.
Oh, what a good idea.
That's what I'm looking for. And so it's and I've heard of something like burner numbers or something along that line, but I don't know that much about it, and I don't know how ethical or how functional these things actually are. So it's just a way to get me organized and, you know, maybe make life not so la vida tired.
Yeah, so there are a couple of ways to approach this. Yeah, there's a burner. There are a number of burner apps. There's one called Burner for iOS and Android. And this isn't exactly what you want. Burner is when somebody asks you for a number and you don't want to give them your real number. You want a number that can be destroyed
right.
at a later time. I mean, you could, I guess, use it as you want because it will create new numbers. I bet you they're time limited because that's the whole idea of Burner. They're not. Yeah. They can last forever.
I don't think that would be great for, like you said, like tech support for family members.
Yeah.
Because these are people who you're not necessarily going to be.
Here's the example they give.
To all the time.
At the bar or online, get to know them before you connect permanently. So you meet a young lady
in
a bar.
You're not sure if they're like.
And Sarah asks you for your number. And so you say, yeah, let me give you my number. And it's a burner number.
Burner number so that you don't keep calling me once I've decided this isn't working.
So they do focus on privacy. On the other hand, I mean. Since they don't expire, I didn't know this, but since you can always burn a number later, but they don't expire, you could use it. The idea would be maybe use them temporarily. You'd also have to keep track of them. Most people do what you want to do, will use a service, something like, Ring Central was a sponsor for a long time. That's probably overkill for you. Or maybe Grasshopper. I used Grasshopper for a long time. The idea is you have your existing number, but you can get multiple numbers. You can have extensions, which might serve the purpose. You know, people could call. You could have a number, not your real number, a number that you get from Grasshopper, and then say, if you're calling for tech support, press 1. If you're calling for the Civil Air Patrol, press 2. If you're calling to sell me something, press...
Hang up.
Yeah. and so these are all very affordable now because they're basically using internet telephony. And things like asterisk servers, it's all digital now. So it's very easy to do this. The problem is the actual phone numbers, believe it or not, still cost money. Somebody's got to lease a block of numbers from the local phone company. And it's so Burner, which is free, right? I mean, I don't think it costs anything. I think eventually there's got to be some financial stability there or you may not have that number for much longer. So I'd probably look at something like grasshopper.com, which is really designed for businesses. Not for people who want to hide their identity, right?
You know, and David, I'm not exactly sure if actually having different numbers is what you specifically want, but I have a phone number, obviously, that's attached to my phone, and my mother uses that phone number. But then I've got some Android friends, and we always use the VoIP section of Facebook Messenger because that works fine, too. And the ring is different. And it's like, right. I know who's calling based on the different rings. You can also set ringtones for different people. So if it's more of just like, I just want to organize all these people that are calling me for different reasons, there are like little hacks like that that are fairly simple, at least to section out. I don't know, if you've got family members who are using Facebook, I love Facebook Messenger VoIP. Use it all the time.
My favorite solution, and the only reason I don't recommend it right away, is Google Voice. And that's only because I don't know if Google Voice is going to be around.
Well, it's Hangouts now, right?
Yeah, Google Fi takes it. But you could still get a free number from Google that is a separate number.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it in your area code.
Yeah.
And then you can have a contact list attached to that number, and you can have different voicemails for different groups. It's a very sophisticated system that would also give you some of those. It doesn't give you multiple numbers. It gives you a new number, but it gives you forwarding options and so forth. So you can say, if anybody calls, you know, you might have a block of users that are your tech support users. If anybody calls from that group, send them to voicemail, and I'll handle it later. You get there. This is free, which is one of the reasons I mentioned.
Okay.
I really love Google Voice. I still use it. I signed up for Project Fi, and my Google Voice number was turned into a Project Fi number, and then I lost some of the features. And I'm not convinced that Google's all in on Google Voice. So that's why I recommend it, but I recommend it with that caveat, I guess.
Well, I think my son-in-law uses Google Voice.
It's great.
For one of his, but again, I haven't talked with him that much about it and didn't know that much about it.
Yeah. So, but Grasshopper is another choice. I mean, they're $5, $6 a month. It's not expensive. You pay for additional lines, things like that. I completely sympathize because once you start helping people out, they own
they
you,
keep
don't they?
Asking. They're like, you're smart. Yeah, the next question.
You're not doing anything, are you?
No, you're not
busy, David. You mind?
He's living la vida tired.
I have people call me and they say, come over. We'll make you lunch. 5 hours later, is there any lunch? Because I've been working for a while on this computer.
And I've got to say this. It's something I've always wanted to say. I'm a longtime viewer and a first-time caller.
So yay! Well, welcome. By the way, we're going to try the kitty cam on this kitty cat.
We'll see
if we can fool Girly Mac's Raspberry Pi.
Look, I get one of those birdie cams for my wife.
Isn't that fun? Hey, it's great to talk to you, David. Thanks for calling. Now that you know the way, come back again soon, okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. All right. Have a good day.
And thanks for your service, and thanks for your continued service to the young people in your area. I think that's great.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Making new pilots all the time. Let's talk a little bit about Braintree before we get to our final segment. Actually, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about drones. We sent Robert to InterDrone, the first time drone conference.
I'm so excited.
Father Robert, the drone father, will be here in a bit. But first, a word from Braintree. We love Braintree. Even Ozzy loves Braintree. You ever take an Uber? Sure. You ever take a Lyft? Sure. Ever go Airbnb? Sure you did.
All three.
Ever Hotel Tonight? Sure. Mm-hmm. Everybody's done it. Well, you know what? The payment system at GitHub, Airbnb, Hotel Tonight, Lyft, and Uber, guess what it is? Braintree payments. That's because anybody in their right mind is not going to code their own online payment system. If you're a mobile app developer, get into Braintree. Braintreepayments.com/NSS. 10 lines of code. Supports, of course, every platform that you use. And now you've got payments. And not just credit cards. Not just PayPal. You've got Venmo. I know you like Venmo. Paying off your friends. You've got Bitcoin. You've got Android Pay. You've got Apple Pay. As soon as Android Pay comes out, you are ready to support payments. Now, the best thing about something like Uber is you get out of the car. There's no buttons to press.
No.
It's done. The transaction's done. That's Braintree Payments. It's awesome. I want you to check it out. A full-stack payment solution for all payment types your customers might want. Superior fraud protection. Great customer service for you. In fact, if you don't have time to do the integration, they'll even do it for you. And yes, payouts are fast. Braintree, they're ready to support your company from its first dollar to its billionth. They've been with GitHub since the very beginning. You're going to love it. BraintreePayments.com/NSS. Try the sandbox. And when you go to BraintreePayments.com/NSS, your first $50,000 in transactions are fee-free. You can't beat that. BraintreePayments.com/NSS. We thank them for their support. Are you ready to fly your drone? It's time to head to InterDrone. Father Robert Ballasaire has a story.
The Consumer Electronics Association says that by the end of 2015, drones will be worth $1.4 billion in California alone, which is why we're here at InterDrone 2015 in Las Vegas, Nevada, to speak with the entrepreneurs and the businessmen who think they have the tech for the next generation of drones.
This is our LRX, and LRX stands for Long Range Extreme Weather. It has a stagger prop arrangement, so large motors and rotors on the top, smaller high-speed motors and rotors on the bottom, so that It gives it a 30 to 35 minute endurance with a good payload. Payload options are many. A lot of what the work we do is aerial surveys, so it's a photogrammetry rig, something like that. We're doing aerial inspection, like with this one here. We have a really nice CM100 turret by UAV Vision. It has an optical sensor with a 30x zoom and a FLIR system on board as well. So we do LiDAR, we do multispectral, you name it, we do it. We've got a gimbal base for every conceivable application.
In order to grow the field of quadcopters, we need to work on their brains. Of course, brain power is great, but it doesn't do much without senses. Now, accelerometers may work well, but if you need real precision, you need lasers. This sensor right now is actually measuring exactly how high this drone is off the ground. If you go ahead and look down at this monitor over right below it, you can see as I move my hand up and down, it's giving me a real time and a real precise view of how much space there is between the drone and my hand. See this little rotating disc? That's not just for fun. That actually shows you exactly what's around. If you, again, look at the monitor down below the drone, you can see that as I move my hand around, it actually picks up exactly what is near it and what might come into conflict with its flight path. This is the kind of sensor that we're going to need if we want to grow our drones past a hobby or a prosumer market. One of the interesting applications, the use cases for drones recently has been the use in agriculture and industrial. And again, they've been crying out for more infrared sensor capability because you can see far more data in the non-visible spectrum than you can in the visible. What are the applications that you've heard of from people visiting your booth?
Pretty much every business that we're in, drones is an extension of those businesses. We're in the firefighting business. This is a spectacular firefighting tool when you add this to a drone. Now we've got a completely new value proposition for firefighters. We're in the building inspection business. We build handheld cameras that do that. You put one of these cameras on a drone, you've got now a much better ability to do a building inspection from the outside and map do a 3D map of a thermal map of an image of a building in a matter of minutes. So the technology and the value propositions that's bringing to all these markets is really profound. The one that I will say that is new to us, that drones has brought us, is the agricultural side. There is a direct correlation between water levels in agriculture and your ability to detect that with thermal imaging and the heat that's radiating it off a field. So it makes it's really a great natural for what we do.
So this right here is the Mayday. It's a really intelligent circuit board that can detect if your drone is crashing, and if it's crashing, it'll deploy a parachute.
How high do you have to be for a parachute to fully deploy?
About 40 feet for all of our parachutes. Yeah, they deploy like within a second.
You've probably noticed those broadcast towers. That's right, those wonderful silver spires into the sky. The reason why they exist is because they give those radio transmitters more line of sight, more direct access to the client devices. Well, wouldn't it be nice if you could do the same thing with your drone? Well, thanks to Gary Daniels, you can. Gary, tell me how this works.
It introduces the idea of a second helper repeater drone to fly the repeaters for the worker. Now it's up very high in the sky where it can radiate down the transmission signal to do like cell phones do in your car, hook you up with the rest of the world. So by flying two drones, one as a helper, one as a worker, you can fly into these previously radical access places you couldn't go before.
You seem to be clutching that case a little tightly. What's inside?
Well, now it really is time to open up the case and look at the next generation of cameras that will go onto the Inspire 1. And we are very proud to introduce the X5, Zenmuse X5 camera. We joined the Micro Four Thirds generation, and today we finally were able to announce that we now have two cameras that can go onto the Inspire. It really changed my way of going about it, because up until now, we had limited ability to control the camera. So now I can do focus. While in the air, I can focus on an object close by, or I can do infinity focus. I also have the ability of going up to 25,000 ISO, and I have such a high range that is all available through my app. So it really is your DSLR camera and the functions you're used to on the ground just now up in the sky.
From large drones that are multi-mission capable to specialized drones that give us a more compact view of the world, InterDrone has it all. It's showing us the future of drone technology. Drones that will be used for agriculture, for safety, for disaster relief, for police enforcement. Now, if you think that you might be interested in drones, it means that you're really interested in the next level of technology. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballester from InterDrone 2015 in Las Vegas, Nevada, saying goodbye and safe flying.
Robert is a master of the drone. Have you seen him fly a drone? He could fly drones under benches, around.
No.
He's amazing.
No,
he
I haven't.
He can make that drone go anywhere. He's very talented.
Well, he's the man to go to InterDrone then.
I bought a fancy drone, the Bebop, Parrot Bebop drone. Supposedly, you just press a button, it just goes up and hovers. I press the button, it flips over.
Maybe you have a faulty drone.
It goes, vroom, and that's it. But that's an improvement, because the drone I had before that, press the button to take off, it took off. I said, stop, it kept going. Pretty soon, I couldn't see it anymore. It's like a little balloon that disappeared into the sky.
And did it ever come back? That was the end of it? It just, like, burned up in the atmosphere?
Don't know.
You bought a rocket drone.
I don't know what happened.
Okay.
It could be, right now, it could be floating to Ecuador. I don't know.
It's gone. It's on Mars.
So I don't have great drone experiences.
International Space Station. They're loving it. There's a drone that some of my coworkers fly around the TechCrunch office.
Nice.
And the rest of us are just like...
Scared. Yeah. Don't fly.
It's disconcerting in general.
Anyway, glad Roberts. He's so good, and this is a great subject for him. Mine just goes like that.
Maybe you ought to have a drone show. Ever thought about that?
I think we do. It's called Know How. Oh. Mark Millian. Yeah. That's the star of Know How, Mr. Brian Burnett on drums. Mark Millian from Bloomberg is here with a tip. If you're looking for groups of people with interests that are similar to yours, including pick up soccer, Mark has a suggestion.
Solution.
Hey, I'm Mark Millian, tech editor at Bloomberg.com, and my tip today is how to find pickup sports in your area. So if you want sort of like a good way to meet up with, get enough people together for a game of football or soccer or ultimate frisbee, probably the best app I've found for that, at least in the San Francisco Bay Area where I live, is meetup.com. I never really used it for anything before, but I play pickup soccer, and to try to get a group of, 12, 14 guys together is not easy. I've tried Facebook groups and, Nike's football app. But meetup.com has a bunch of like organized groups with like thousands of people who are into pickup soccer, and they also do football and a number of others. And it's drawn in some great people, and we've gotten some really good games going.
He looks like he might play professional.
Yeah, I know. Mark Millian from Bloomberg Business Week. Are you ready? Are you?
Pick up basketball. Are you in?
No.
You and I, we're going to go down to Western Edition.
Yeah.
And we're just gonna walk
Find
on.
Find some other people to play with.
Yeah.
And we're going to show them what's shirts and skins. Up. See, I always get skins, and I don't want to take off my shirt, so that's out.
Okay. Hey, Leo.
What?
I feel like, I don't know, life is so boring. I wish something cool would happen.
It's time for the mailbag.
Oh, my gosh.
Look,
wow.
Look.
All you had to do was ask.
Whoa.
What's in there?
Inside?
Looks like some baked beans.
No, that's the Timor stew.
Oh.
It's hearty. It's delicious. Would you like some?
Sure.
We offer it to all the co-hosts.
It's a hearty
now.
Meal. Well, no preservatives.
It's good stuff.
Mm,
here, which
Pop-top.
One do you want? You get a choice.
I would like...
Pick it.
This one.
That's it. Why don't you start?
All right. First email comes from Adam, who says, hello, Twits. I'm looking into subscribing to a music streaming service, but on paper, they all look the same. I'm an Android user. I have all my music backed up into Google Play Music, so I'm tempted to just stay in the ecosystem and subscribe there.
But is there a better option? I know Apple Music is coming to Android this fall. Maybe that's worth the wait. Is there a big difference in music libraries? I listen to a lot of indie rock, if that matters. Thanks in advance. Keep up the great work on the Twitch shows.
Why, Adam was a lot more wordy in person than he was on the screen here. Oh. He really was really much more succinct on the screen. Do you use Apple Music?
So you get 3 months free, right? When Apple Music
rolled out.
We're
coming
to the
end. You got 2 more weeks. Before
yeah, but
it's
I didn't
all over.
Start it right away, so I have a little bit longer, you know, because three mm-hmm. months from when you sign up. I use RDO. Anybody who used to watch iPad
RDO.
Today knows that I'm faithful to it because, I mean, RDO has. RDO is probably not long for this world because Spotify has kind of run away with the market. Apple Music had quite an uptick of users right away for probably a lot of people who didn't already subscribe somewhere.
Well,
but now do for the first time.
It's there, and
it's
tried
free.
It.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think really they're all for essentially pretty much the same.
That was my impression.
Yeah. I mean, Apple Music is going to have some exclusives, you know, a week of Taylor Swift before anybody else has the new album, that sort of thing. I know when Dr. Dre's new album, Compton, before it was officially
was
released,
yeah.
it was streamed via Apple Music. I tuned in and listened. So it's like you get a few little extras. But if you're honestly, Adam, like, hey, I just like indie music. I just want to pretty much look for artists and play stuff when I feel like it. The libraries are all pretty much the same.
If you're you not, haven't chosen, I mean, I think Apple Music is completely legitimate, but I just feel like most people have already picked a service.
Yeah.
It might be Pandora or Spotify, or in your case, RDO. I love Spotify. They have every Monday, they have the Discover Weekly playlist, which is generated kind of based on your interests. And I love it. It's got old, it's got new.
You're not the only one. People go bonkers for that.
Isn't it? It's a great feature.
I don't use Spotify.
But that's the thing.
I'm
this is
holding
all, it's
out.
It's all $10.
Yeah.
So I think...
Everything's the same price.
And roughly the same library.
They're roughly the same library. I honestly think it's almost a matter of just, hey, do I like this design? Ooh, I kind of like this like little feature. Or I like the heart or that sort of thing. Apple Music is really nice. But if you've already got so much backed up through Google...
Right.
That might be a better way to go because you're already in that app anyway.
I'll tell you the disadvantage, and it's a little bit of a disheartening for me on Google Play Music because I love it. And like Apple Music, all of your library, the stuff that's not even in their library gets uploaded.
Hmm.
So you can play all your songs. If you're into indie rock and the stuff that's not on Google Play Music, you can listen to those albums. But it's very limited. You can only have a certain number of devices. I have too many devices, so I can't add a new phone, you know, because I always get new phones.
And you can't deactivate?
You can only deactivate once if you get like 3 devices every 4 months or something. It's crazy.
Why?
It's
not, what are they worried about?
It's the music industry. These are restrictions imposed by the music industry. But I found for some reason, I feel like Google, I was really high on All Access. In fact, I pay less for it because I got it right at the beginning. It's only $8 a month. It's not doing it for me. I've decided I have Apple Music, I have Google, I have Pandora. I think I'm going to go with Spotify.
Spotify. Well, Pandora's also not, it's in a different category altogether.
Because, you're right, because it's just radio stations.
Yeah, and Pandora is great. I use Pandora regularly, but that's for a different...
But all of these now have radio stations. So, mm-hmm. you know, Apple Music has mood stations and artist stations.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
The picnic playlist, that sort of thing.
What about indie rock? Do you know offhand? I think you like indie rock.
I like some indie rock, for sure.
Is there one service that's better in indie rock?
No.
No.
Honestly,
it's
funny because for a while, I had RDO and Spotify because those were like the 2 streaming music services.
Yep.
There's Deezer, there are others, but those were kind of the two that were getting the most attention, and an album would disappear from one and then it would appear on the other and then it would disappear, and it's like it's all of these rights managements where the music industry pull it, and then there has to be another license that the company gets, and then that those albums come back, which can be kind of frustrating because I've made playlists, like I have this like old school hip-hop playlist that's like really fun for a barbecue, and now like half of the songs on that playlist are just grayed out.
That's
because the rights have gone away since I made this playlist, and I mean, I put some effort into it. So I don't think any of the services is a solution for
that. I got a trick question for you.
Okay.
Which of the services do you think has the biggest selection? There is one.
That has the biggest selection?
Biggest selection, and it's not the one you're thinking. I can almost promise it's not the one they're thinking. It's Microsoft's Groove Music Service.
Yeah, I would never say that.
I would never have thought so either.
I didn't even remember it.
More than 40 million songs. They, and, no, you know, it changes, you're right. but it is the largest, last time I checked, the largest service. So you might want to at least check and see if they have the indie music that you're looking for.
Yeah, if it's kind of obscure indie, then you might want the biggest library.
Yeah, maybe that's the one.
Yeah.
But I'm sticking with Spotify. I like it.
Yeah, you're not alone. Spotify is, they're pretty solid.
Yeah. And you know they have that running thing now? I never run. But if I ever were to run, it's pretty cool.
Sure.
It matches the beat of the music to the cadence of your running.
Yeah, you know, Selena Larson, who writes for Daily Dot now, she wrote a long, because she's a runner.
She loves it.
She loves it, yeah. She was like, wow, this is like next gen of running. I really haven't heard many people talk about it since it first came out. And again, I don't use Spotify, so I haven't taken advantage of it.
Runner.
But I do run. I run several times a week, so I'm going
Sarah,
to.
Sarah, I think you
You know what it is? It's because I believe that Erdio will eventually shut down because it hasn't been acquired yet.
Yeah.
That's just kind of my gut feeling. Yeah. So I want to use it
to
until we rest it, until it, we lay it to rest.
How you feel.
Or, you know, I might be wrong, too. I hope I am.
Spotify, I think, is financially the most solid. They've
I
got
think
60
so.
Million.
Yeah. Apple Music, too. Probably
they'll
not
be
going
around.
Anywhere.
You know what? They're
soon.
Not going anywhere. Good point. Or Google Music.
Yeah.
Hey, this is from Cliff. I have a Mac that my daughter gave me for my birthday. I know it's not bulletproof. Well, you shouldn't shoot it. Yeah. I looked at the Bitdefender for virus protection. I know nothing about it. Could you please give me some input, Cliff? I'll tell you, I don't recommend antivirus on any platform anymore. And here's why. Most of the viruses, most of the exploits that can take advantage of your system are what we call or zero-day or very short turnaround exploits, so fast that the antiviruses can't get updated fast enough. They are, in fact, not protecting you. They may find older viruses, but most of the things to worry about are newer exploits that they just don't know about. It's really true that on the Mac, there's no need for an antivirus. I don't think on mobile there's a need for antivirus. You might make the argument because so many viruses come out on Windows that that's a good idea. But Microsoft includes its own antivirus with versions of Windows 8 and Windows 10. So I don't really think this is sacrilege. You need an antivirus on any platform. Safe computing is really about your behavior.
Yeah.
Stay, you know, not clicking links, staying away from bad places, and most importantly, keeping your system up to date. Google did a recent survey between security experts and normal people, and the biggest difference was between the two. Normal people, almost to a man, number one, antivirus. Security experts barely mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
Experts don't really think antiviruses do anything except give you false confidence.
Yeah.
So don't worry about it.
Yeah. I mean, worry about it. But
don't do
the
it.
Antivirus software is—it's not like there's
you.
One that you really need to install on your Mac. Yeah, I don't know anybody who does.
No, not anymore.
Times have changed. Times have changed.
That's kind of old-fashioned advice.
But I mean, I do get like phishing scam emails constantly.
That's
the sort of thing that you should be vigilant about for sure.
This is the Google survey. So the number one thing the security experts say: update software. Number two: use unique passwords. Two-factor authentication. Strong passwords. Use a password manager. It's all about passwords. For the normies, use antivirus software is number one. And then visit websites. You only visit websites you know. That's actually not.
Right.
That's meaningless.
That doesn't. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
I love that website. Good friend.
I know
good
them.
Friend.
They're
I trust
good.
Him.
They're good people.
Yeah.
You know who I know and love and miss?
Who?
You, Sarah Lane.
Oh, I miss you too. I miss everybody here.
It's fun to have you back. Come back on a regular basis. Just visit. Take some stew with you.
You
That's
know
our,
the weight of my
parting
heart.
Gift.
Hearty meal.
And if you don't want to eat it, I'm sure your kitty cats will.
Oh, yeah. You know what kitty farts smell like?
Yes, I do know.
I'll give you a hint.
Unfortunately,
not good.
I have learned. Do your So our cats, about 5:30 in the morning, decide to have a kitty circus every morning.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
They do acrobatics. They mm-hmm. do jumps. They do, mm-hmm. you know, they practically sing music as they're racing around.
Yeah, I taught my cat Lucy recently had a high five. True story, which I'm really proud about. The problem is that now that she's like, oh, like
that's all she wants
Sarah
to do.
Likes it when I do the paw,
yeah.
you know, because I'll go high five and she'll do that.
Oh, that's cute.
But now in the morning when she's like, I'd love it if you were up at 4:30 to feed me.
Yeah.
This is what happens.
High five, high five, Sarah. High five, Sarah. High five, Sarah.
Yeah, it's not. it's a bad idea. I've raised a circus cat who's gone rogue, so
there's that.
But thank you for having me. It was really nice to
Come
be here.
Soon. I'm glad things are going
it's
well.
Fun, it's fun because it's like, in some ways,
you
it's exactly
this.
The same, and in some ways, things have changed
Nothing
a little bit.
Nothing has changed. Not a thing has changed.
Well, no, I'm sure that's not true.
Go ahead, find one thing that's changed.
That set. and there's some brownie bites in the kitchen I don't remember being
the
there
snacks,
before.
Ever-changing.
Yeah.
Sarah Lane, we'll see you every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah, right on TechCrunch.com. Can't miss it.
On her daily news update, and I'm sure lots more great things coming from you at TechCrunch.
Yeah.
Thanks to all of you for joining us. We do the new screensavers every Saturday afternoon, about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC. Right after the radio show, please tune in. Watch us live at twit.tv. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video is always available after the fact. Subscribe. That way you'll get every episode. And if you want to be in the studio audience, email tickets at twit.tv. We always have a great studio audience for this show. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on the new screensavers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah.